Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories. We have stories that should thrill you a little and chill you a little.
It's amazing.
You will hear adventures sent in by you guys, classic stories from the pulp mags, and episodes from the golden age of radio. We have special segments like Ghost Stories with Sylvia.
That's amazing.
And the paranormal with Jason.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
So settle in for the next hour and enjoy the show. Oh, and you just might want to prepare yourself to be taken away from today.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-Minute Mystery is being brought to you by The Graveyard, Part 2. Forests may be gorgeous, but there's nothing more alive than a tree that learns how to grow in a cemetery. Now, what does that have to do with our story today? Not a blessed thing.
That at the electric organ, Al.
Oh, that's Keen Brown, Mike. I find it cheaper to hire him to play fill-in music than a full band.
What do you do for entertainment when he's off the platform?
There's a portable record player underneath the piano.
Oh, yeah, I see it. One of those battery jobs. Huh?
Yeah. We play dance music on it when Keen knocks off for intermission periods.
Okay, Al, I'm sold. This cabaret of yours looks like a sound proposition. I'll buy it.
Swell, Mike. I'll be back in just a few minutes. The contract's in my office.
Okay, that's it. Hey, the lights have gone out.
There's an emergency switch in my office. I'll turn it on. Be back in a second.
I'm Keen Brown. You wanted to see me?
Yes, Mr. Brown. My name's Mike Evans. I'm just checking up on a few facts until the police get here.
Sure. What can I do to help?
This was payroll night for the employees here, wasn't it?
Yeah, Al usually paid us off after closing.
You won't get paid tonight, Mr. Brown. Look at the safe. I'm not a detective, but it doesn't take an experienced eye to spot this whole thing as an inside job.
How do you figure that out?
Someone working here knew that Al had the weekly payroll in his office safe tonight. And only someone who was completely familiar with this cabaret would know the location of the light box.
Then all you have to do, Mr. Evans, is to establish the position of every employee at the time Al was shot.
That's right. Suppose I start with you.
Me?
No objections, I hope. After all, you've been here long enough to know how to turn off the electrical system for the entire building or to tell someone how to do it.
Are you accusing me?
No, I'm simply asking you where you were at the time the shot was fired.
You know where I was. I was on the stand playing my electric organ so there wouldn't be any panic.
That's right, I did hear you playing.
Correct the first time. Now, if you'll excuse me, I think I've had enough of your amateur detective work.
And there's nothing further you can do to help me?
Nothing, except to call a policeman and get this murder solved.
That won't be necessary, Mr. Brown. I know who the murderer is.
Really? Who?
You, Mr. Brown. You made your own confession.
How does Mike Evans know that Keen Brown is the murderer? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
Yeah, how does Mike Evans know? I might not be the brightest tool in the shed, but I do know how to listen, and I didn't hear anything that would help us nail this organ player as thief and killer. But hey, that's nothing new for these mysteries and is actually part of the charm. My guess is that the music plays a role in it all, but let's head back and hear what we missed or were not told this time.
And now, back to our story.
Brown, you admitted that the important clue in this case was to find where every employee of this cabaret was at the time the shot was fired. You claim to have been on the stand playing your electric organ. I heard the music, but whether I heard you, I don't know. I believe I heard your music coming from a record. A record on the player beneath the electric organ. You couldn't have been playing at the time the lights were out because the whole electrical system had been sabotaged. And to play an electric organ... you need electricity. Your speaker has to be plugged into an outlet. Right, I suppose? Brown, let's take up your suggestion. I'll call the police. There's been a murder.
Okay, I get it. They did mention that the record player ran off batteries. Clever storytelling, but how in the world would you mistake real organ play over that of a battery-powered phonograph? I really doubt that they would sound the same. This 5 minutes was brought to you by the improbable and, well, quite frankly, unbelievable. Welcome to the podcast, but more importantly, welcome to the 10th annual Month of Spooky. That's right, this is our 10th year of podcasting and trying to chill you a little and thrill you a little. This month you will hear old-time classic horror, crazy scary stories, and even a few surprises. Next Tuesday, we will have a special podcast in addition to our normal Thursday show. It will be the annual replay of what has been called one of the scariest old-time radio broadcasts in history. Now, if you are a terrestrial radio listener, you'll have to head to the main website to hear this one. Internet listeners will get it through the normal outlets. On today's show, we continue the theme from last week about the graveyard. We have a listener's story from an Omaha cemetery, and Jason Dowd joins us for yet another edition of The Paranormal with Jason. This time he updates us on his voodoo graveyard adventure, and we hear his origin story, the tale of the Green Lady in Burlington, Connecticut. This one dates all the way back to the late 18th century. So sit back and enjoy. If you can, the beginning of the month of Spooky 2020. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. They have over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, computer, Kindle. Whatever you have, you can listen to Audible on it. So what am I listening to right now? We are Legion. We are Bob. Bobverse, Book 1 by Dennis E. Taylor. Bob Johansson has just sold his software company for a small fortune and is looking forward to a life of leisure. The first item on his to-do list is spending his newfound windfall. On an urge to splurge, he signs up to have his head cryogenically preserved in case of death. Then he gets himself killed crossing the street. Take a listen to this from the book.
Good. You're awake. I tried to respond, but what came out was something like a cross between a cough and static. For God's sake, that sounded like a voice synthesizer having a breakdown. Freud put down the tablet, leaned forward, and rested his arms on the desk or table or whatever. Please keep trying. It can take a few attempts for the guppy interface to mesh. I considered what he'd said. It immediately brought up 3 points. Point one, I wasn't dead. Well, okay, I think therefore I am, yada yada. Call that one proven. Point two, I wasn't good as new. In fact, I appear to be speaking through a voice synthesizer, but doing so by mental control, which meant, point three, that the technology had advanced significantly since I'd been hit by the car. How long had I been out? And what the heck was a guppy interface? I tried again, concentrating on forming the words. Someone want to fill me in on what's going on? Freud clapped his hands once. Excellent. I am Dr. Landers, Bob. I will answer any questions you have, and I will help to prepare you for your new life. New life? What's wrong with my old one? I already don't like where this is going. Dr. Landers pulled the tablet over so that it was directly in front of him. So, Bob, what's the last thing you remember?
A car coming right at me. I was sure it was going to hit me. I'm pretty sure it did.
It did indeed, Bob. You arrived at the hospital in critical condition with a very poor prognosis. Per your contract with Cryo Eterna, they were standing by with a cryo container when time of death was pronounced.
Well, good to know my money wasn't wasted anyway. So what year is it?
Dr. Landers laughed. So nice to talk to a subject so quick on the uptake. It is June 24th, 2133, and we are currently in New Handeltown, which would have been Portland in your day. I was surprised by that. So that's 117 years. Wait, where did that come from? I'd always been able to do math in my head with no effort, but it normally required me to at least go through the calculation steps. This answer had arrived as if spoken in my ear. Huh, something to investigate later. Add to to-do list. I turned my attention back to the doctor. The shirt made a little more sense now. Styles would change in 100+ years. I really wanted to get a look at that watch, though.
Whose handle?
I asked. Ah, now, Bob, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I have an established script for bringing candidates up to date, and history lessons come later.
So, what happened to old Handeltown?
Dr. Landers smiled and shook his head in mock sorrow. I sighed and nodded. Well, I tried to nod. My field of view didn't move, so I had control over my eyes, but not my head. I was starting to suspect some kind of locked-in syndrome. Instead, I grunted.
Right. So can we talk about how much of me is still human? This artificial voice thing tells me that you haven't been able to make me good as new. How much is Borg? Should I ask for a mirror? Or would that be a bad idea?
Ah, Dr. Landers glanced down at his tablet and hesitated, then looked back at me. It would be inaccurate to compare you to a Borg. If I remember my Trek trivia correctly, they are at least partly human. I think Mr. Data would be a better comparison. I simply stared at him for what seemed like forever. My mind was blank. I couldn't seem to form a thought. Finally, I found my voice.
Excuse me?
I noted almost in passing that I still wasn't having a panic attack. For the first time, I suspected I knew why.
You, Bob, are what most people would call an artificial intelligence. Although that's not strictly accurate, you are a copy of the mind of Robert Johansson, created by scanning his cryogenically frozen brain at the subcellular level and converting the data into a computer simulation. You are, essentially, a computer program that thinks it's Robert Johansson, a replicant.
Well, waking up 117 years later, Bob discovers that his mind has been uploaded into a sentient space probe with the ability to replicate itself. Bob and his clones are on a mission to find new homes for humanity and boldly go where no Bob has gone before. Taylor's hilarious novel sets the stage for the magnificent narrator, Ray Porter, who reveals the brave new world of corpuscles, artificial intelligence, interstellar space probes, and space colonization in tantalizing detail. Now, does this sound interesting? You can have We Are Legion, We Are Bob today. Here's what Audible has set up for us. They are offering a free audiobook and 30 days to give you the opportunity to check out the service. To download your free audiobook, go to audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Ron's Amazing Stories, and you too can have We Are Legion, We Are Bob. Thank you, Audible. And now, it's time for your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
We have a graveyard tale from Jerome Masters. Hey Ron, I heard you asking for graveyard stories, and I have one for you. I work the 4 p.m. to 12 a.m. shift at the Omaha National Cemetery. It generally closes at 6 p.m., so around 5:30 p.m., I would lock the main gate and start driving through the cemetery to notify any visitors that we'd be closing soon. So one day, I'm in the middle of my final drive-through and I see an old lady walking the sidewalk alongside a mausoleum. Now, this mausoleum was hundreds of feet long and about 20 feet tall and had no breaks in it. It's just one long stretch. The road ran directly alongside a sidewalk. So I pulled up behind the lady to tell her we're closing, got out of my car, took my eyes off her for a split second, and she was gone. Completely vanished. I didn't think anything paranormal at first. I just thought maybe I lost sight of her. But the sidewalk and road were completely empty. I ran all the way around to the back of the mausoleum. There was no one there either. Across the street was a full field of graves, and I checked every single row. Not a soul in sight. I finished my rounds and then sat in the car for the rest of the night in a well-lit area. What I saw was a fully visible person. I know it. No tricks of light, no hallucination, plain as day. Jerome Masters, Omaha, Nebraska. Wow, Jerome, that is a crazy story. That is our only tale for this time. If you have one that you would like to share, like Jerome did, head to the main website at ronsamazingstories.com and click on the story submission banner. Please make your stories our story. What is the paranormal? Experts tell us that it is the events or phenomenon that are beyond the scope of normal scientific understanding. But it's more than that. To people like Jason Dowd, it is a way of life. He faces each day in hopes of finding the answers to questions that few would think to ask or would want to ask. Welcome to The Paranormal with Jason. Jason, my man, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic.
Well, now, that's not what I've heard. I've heard quite the opposite.
Really, the opposite?
The exact opposite. I've heard that you have been under the gun with hurricanes and tropical depression. Is that not true?
We have had tropical depressions, but the wind, we didn't get really much wind. We have been having a lot of rain, but that's honestly typical for this area at this time of the year. So It's not really anything that I've experienced outside of it, but we have had a couple of near misses on a couple of hurricanes. But even if they would have hit us, it would have been at about a 1, which is about 80 mile an hour winds, which is just a little bit stronger than a tropical storm. So nothing that I was really that concerned about. But you do have to still worry about it because you still get flooding. And I'm only 4 miles away from the Gulf of Mexico.
So. That's what I understood. Now, didn't most of the hurricanes hit in the Gulf this time?
They did. And sometimes we even had 2 of them in the Gulf of Mexico, but they all seemed to go after Louisiana. So I don't know what Louisiana did to piss off the spirit world, but they just got bombarded.
Tell me something about winds there. Winds here mean a whole lot. When we have strong winds, everything comes down. Trees, limbs, power lines, you name it, just all comes down. What's a strong wind like in Tampa, Florida?
Generally, we don't get much of it. We get the tropical rain. I mean, we're only about 120 miles away from the equator. So we get the tropical rains and stuff like that. See, the problem with it is that the way that we go, the hurricanes come all the way off of Africa and usually come just around the Bahamas and Jamaica and all those places. So they kind of go up and around. And then when they do that, they come up around into the Gulf of Mexico. And it depends on where they hit, depends upon the Gulf Stream. Because see, the Gulf Stream is clockwise, where a hurricane goes counterclockwise, so they repel. That's why Tampa doesn't seem to get hit as much, because we were supposed to get dead hit with Katrina, but it hit the Gulf Stream and went up towards Louisiana. It repelled itself. Now, when we get winds around here, generally, they're 40 to 50 mile an hour winds, and they're just a slight gust. But it has to be a really heavy storm for that to happen. Generally, here in Florida, there is no wind. It's stagnant. It's about 90% humidity. It's like we've been having 95, 96 degree days with about 85% humidity, which puts it about 125. So when you walk outside, it is a sauna. It's not dry heat. And there's no wind to cool you down. So you sweat in places you didn't know you sweat. But thank goodness for us, we do not really have a lot of winds just because of where we are. If we did, the Gulf of Mexico would probably be overflowing with waves. Like the Gulf of Mexico, if you actually look at it, it's very calm. So we're lucky. I don't have that over here. Now, it's a little bit different in Miami, where Miami and on the Gulf Coast there, the Atlantic Coast, it gets windy. You can have 25, 30 mile an hour winds on a general basis. Won't blow up anything, but it feels good. And that's technically where you go surfing in Duval County, which is Jacksonville, Broward County, West Palm Beach, Miami-Dade, Dade County. Those are the places that have more winds and you have the cool surf.
So where do the retirees live? Do they live in your neck of the woods or over by Miami then?
In Tampa, yes. They go to Clearwater and they go into Tampa. I mean, they go into where I am here in Newport Richey, but generally they go to West Palm Beach. They go to Siesta Key. They go to Miami. They go to Sarasota, because Sarasota is very artsy. In fact, it has the Ringling Museum. If anybody wants to look that up, that is really cool because it's owned by the Ringling Brothers, has some of the most exotic art and some of the most amazing gardens that you can imagine. And so it's a very artsy town. It's either South Florida, Naples, Siesta Key, Sarasota, or they go to West Palm Beach, Duval County, Miami-Dade, those type of places.
Interesting.
Oh, yes. So I hear you're having some weather problems yourself.
Well, no, actually, we are back into a normal Pacific Northwest pattern. And basically, that means it rains, and then it starts to rain. And then it rains, which is nice, because I don't know if you knew what happened to us, but we had we have these forest fires burning out of control all over the area. And then we had the relative humidity issue where the Pacific Northwest dropped to 10%. And then we had the high winds, and that just raked all kinds of damage. But all of that is pretty much in the past. Right now, the air quality is 5. And at its worst, it was, I measured it and checked it. It was 524 at one point. And it was the absolute worst in the world. In the world. Not just, we set records here.
That's crazy.
Oh, it was terrible. It was no fun at all. But right now, everything's back to normal. Crystal clean air, lots of light breezes, and rain. Which the firefighters, I'm sure, are going, yes.
Yes.
Things are actually back to normal here. In fact, that's I'm good. Looking outside right now, and it is fall-like. So I'm happy.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, I know the whole Pacific coast has been hit with fires and stuff like that. So having that rain has got to feel comforting.
Well, you know, droughts don't happen here very often.
No, they
and,
don't.
Yeah, and so we basically had a drought for, I don't know, 2, 3, maybe even 4 weeks of just not much rain. And then this east wind, this hot, which is odd in itself, comes flying in and it just dried everything out beyond dried. And it was unbelievable. I've lived here since I was 3 years old and I've never seen anything like it, ever.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that's enough about the weather. What do you think?
I think so too.
Well, Jason, a few weeks, I'm going to say actually a few months ago, you and I talked about what we were going to do our next show on.
Yes, we did.
And we decided then that we were going to do it on graveyards. Mm-hmm. However, things happened on your end. You had some family issues, and then we both got busy, and then I had the COVID issue and then the fire issue, and it got delayed. But yes. During that time, during that section of bad karma, we'll call it, I got an email from Chris Bennett from Rapid City, South Dakota. And that set up the opportunity to not just do a graveyard show with you, but, well, why don't I read the email?
Go for it. I think this will set it all up.
All right. So this is from Chris Bennett, who lives in Rapid City, South Dakota, and I did read this last week. It says, "Ron, I have a question about ghost hunting. If possible, I would like to ask my question of both Jason and Sylvia. I love to visit graveyards. They have so many secrets, and some of those can be found on the headstones. I've heard both Jason and Sylvia talk about investigating these places, but I have never heard them talk about the headstones. Do you guys just search for residents? Or are you as interested in the art of the epitaph?" So, Jason, what's your response to Chris?
Now, here in Florida, there are no epitaphs. It's very boring. In fact, most of the stones are flat, like the footstones that would be typical seen up in New England. With the headstone, we just have the footstones. So you really have to know where people are buried and kind of know the layout of the cemeteries. But growing up, we're going to talk about it here again in a little bit, but the Green Lady Cemetery was one of my favorite cemeteries. And that's really what got me into the history and the lore of it, but also the epitaphs, because they used to put these evil faces on a lot of these stones, which was there to ward off different types of evil spirits and things that would do bad to that body. Also, the amazing artwork that they would put into the lettering and how they would say things, because I'm talking 1600s, 1700s. So, you know, wow. I was born in colonial New England. So I got to see a lot of those really cool design patterns, how it looked and how it felt. However, in the Green Lady Cemetery, there were 5 people that died during the Revolutionary War that were buried there. There's also a huge amount of people that died just before 1812. Now, not during the War of 1812 in general. So I went back and looked up some history on that, and come to find out, most of the people, Burlington, where I was from, where I was born and where that cemetery was, that particular cemetery was decimated with people with yellow fever. So most of the town was gone from that. But we also in there found Cornelius Cornwall, which was one of the original signers and part of the Continental Congress. This is all in my backyard where I was born, wow. My first house that I lived at. I could literally walk maybe 300 yards to it. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that I loved growing up. I used to go out there and do grave rubbings. They won't let you do those anymore because it kind of hurts the stones, but I didn't know at the time. And, you know, I love the lore of it because I love to find out all these people that are there. And some of them have a big impact on the town that you live in. You just got to look up some of the history of your town. Sometimes you can go down the street and see this old building and you're like, wow, it's a really cool old building. You know, I wonder what it was. And then you find out it was an old hardware store in the 1880s, or like a general store in the 1880s. Then you go to the cemetery and find out the guy that actually created that thing. So you knew he was standing behind that counter ringing people up. I mean, some of that is just the coolest things that I've ever seen. And it kind of really gets you into the connection of where you are. Now, for instance, I went to Brandon, Florida, and there is the family of Brandon, Florida, and that's where the town was named after. But it's a little itty bitty place. I mean, it's got maybe 10 people buried there, but that is the founding family of Brandon, Florida. So it's just really cool what you can find there, but the art of it is just spectacular, especially if you find one that's really, really old and the people really cared about the stones that were put there. However, right here in Brooksville, Florida, there is a typically African-American cemetery. And what's really cool about this is there's not a lot of heavy detail to it. Most of them were poor. And the crypts that they would put into the ground to put your casket in so that way the ground doesn't fall on top of you was actually buried down, and just the top of that particular crypt was hanging out of it. So they didn't have to dig it so far. But yet it's still good enough so that the casket won't come out of the ground. And then what they would do is they would take a little bit of cement and they would handwrite. You could tell that they used a finger or a stick or something and wrote the name of the person on it.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily the most beautiful cemetery ever. But you knew that the people did with what they could. And they physically did their own handwriting for the loved ones that they lost. And that, to me, is absolutely gorgeous. I love it.
Well, Jason, that brings me to ask a question that I asked Sylvia then.
Okay.
Are you a tapophile?
A tapophile. Man, that, you know, I don't play that kind of stuff. No. Yeah, I am. I love cemeteries. I've always been drawn to them. When I drive by, I got to look at them, even if it's just for a few minutes. There's just something about them that calls me there. And yeah, I am 100% addicted to cemeteries.
Well, when Sylvia and I were talking about it, I said to her, I said, if you are the most rightist, meaning the most conservative tapophile there is, then Jason is the opposite of that. Would you agree with that statement?
I didn't know what you meant until we talked before the show, but yes, that is 100% true. Weird things happen to me in cemeteries, and I have seen probably more activity. And a lot of the times when you talk to ghost hunters and any type of people in the paranormal, they say that cemeteries aren't an active place. But I beg to differ, because most of my most dramatic experiences happened in a cemetery.
Well, we're going to get to those in a minute. But one of the things that Sylvia mentioned was is that she doesn't really have any experiences in graveyards. Mm-hmm. They're calm, quiet. Her opinion is the spirits aren't there. They are where they want to be, or where they had their experience, where they died, where they haunt. And that isn't a graveyard. How do you respond to that?
Well, I believe that why would you want to stay with your body? You know, especially if you knew that you passed on. A lot of the times that person would stay at the house or stay at the place that they died at, as opposed to with their body. But there are people that were killed and don't even know that they're dead. According to some of the legends of what happens, you're actually shocked, or you died suddenly from something and you don't know that you're technically dead. So they're sitting there with their body not understanding what the heck's going on, and they haven't crossed over yet. So those are some of the two theories that go on with it. Now, I went to a cemetery up in Dade City, and I take a lot of my friends there that want to learn ghost hunting, because first of all, it has a lot of background noise and a lot of white noise. Because it's in the woods, it's in a like a mountainy area, which doesn't exist much down here, believe me. I mean, when I say mountain, I'm talking maybe a small little grade, you know. But anyways, there are kids there that were buried in the 1800s, and most of them died from malaria and other types of typhoid fever and stuff like that. Very common down here with the size of the mosquitoes. And if you've ever been to Florida, you'd understand. In fact, most of the time, this was a penal colony because of the fact that if you did something wrong up in Connecticut, they would ship you down here, and the chances of you making out alive were very slim to none.
Wow.
So we do have a lot of that stuff. Now, when I go over there, I have always found floating orbs. There's no electricity around us, no gas, no nothing. but you can see them glowing and just floating around in different places. I've also heard the kids playing. I have EVPs of them where kids were playing and you can hear them talking in those graves. Now, with us, when I go there, nobody was under the age of 28. So that would be impossible to have. And the other thing that we had there is I put a ball out there and you could see the ball moving back and forth.
Wow.
So there was some type of activity there, and kids are a little bit more naive to things. So they may not know that they're dead. That's just a theory. But with me, I have also found that the biggest cemetery experience that I ever had that got me started in ghost hunting and cemeteries was a woman who was murdered. I have a feeling that she was just not at rest. So I do believe that 90% of the cemeteries probably have absolutely nothing about them. But there are cemeteries that do, and you got to look and research on the cemetery a little bit. There's one that my wife, Fran, her mom lived off of Kent Grove in Spring Hill. And I found out that when I went there, I was literally lifted off of a cement like garden seat and thrown off. It landed on my leg and I could not move. And I had to have my wife come and get me because I could not move my leg.
Really?
It was just too damn heavy. Now, here's the thing. I talked to my friend Kim, who is a ghost hunter, and she found out that this cemetery had over 13 people that were murdered moved to the cemetery.
Oh, wow.
From other cemeteries. So there are a lot of murdered people in there. I did not know that. But you do get a weird feeling every time you drive by it. Most people don't like to even go near it.
Do you think that your experiences in a cemetery are greater because of your sensitivity? Because as far as I know, Sylvia is about as sensitive to the spiritual things as I am to a rock. So do you think that that has something to do with it, that you're more sensitive to it?
Absolutely.
Or are cemeteries haunted?
No, I believe that I am probably more sensitive to it. And since 1990, I've been battling MS. So there was a movie, I can't quite remember what it was. Oh, A Haunting in Connecticut. He said, when you have one foot in the grave, you have more experiences with paranormal stuff. And that's true. When I am really, really sick or I'm really, really tired, I can actually pick up more stuff because I'm using more energy to stay awake and stay healthy and just active. So I'm alert. And when I do get tired or I do get in a place where I am sick and not feeling good, I will have more activities. And I think that's because the ghost can use that to contact me, which makes me one of the people that everybody wants to take ghost hunting.
Wow. Well, okay. So let's get to it. Let's get to the Jason origin story. We've told it before, but it is a story that is worth repeating. So tell us the Jason origin story. And I think it's important because it took place in a graveyard.
It did. So, but really quick backstory to this particular cemetery. This cemetery was the backyard of a lady. I believe her name was Louise. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. But what she did was she was an expert swimmer, and she was found drowned in a lake down the street. Now, how do you become an expert swimmer and drown? You don't, unless you have a cramp or something like that. But according to the autopsy, she didn't have that. So the weird thing about it was is that she was placed in her backyard, which most people did back then, especially in an unincorporated town. They buried you on your property. So eventually her husband died, and her husband was the man that they thought or suspected of killing her.
Wow.
Nothing happened until he was buried and buried next to her. After he was buried next to her in about 1815, 1820, because she died in 1790, the grass around her grave, the little square, died and it never grew.
Hmm.
And people were known to see a green lady mist. It would come out of her grave. It would turn into a full-blown lady, period of time of 1790. And she would walk around. Now, if you were in the cemetery at the time, it was said that she would possess the female if you brought a female with you. And that female would turn on the male counterpart of whoever it was inside that cemetery. So it was basically like her trying to get revenge on men, which really kind of brought the story up there that her husband actually killed her, but nobody actually went to jail for it. But if your murderer is laid next to you, how can you rest in peace?
You'd be at battle all the time.
Exactly. So I went up there, and me and my grandfather, like I said, we would go do grave rubbings every Friday night. So it'd be a typical night like tonight. And I would get out of school around 2 o'clock. And by 4 o'clock, we'd go see my grandmother, and then we would go do something. Now, in Connecticut, because the peninsula of Connecticut and New England sticks out further than Florida does, by like 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, it would be pitch dark. Like it would be around 7 here in Florida, 8 o'clock in the wintertime. It was around Halloween time. So we went up there and we walked the place. And then when I went in there, it was just a really weird feeling. I mean, I can't explain exactly how it was, but it's kind of like when you have one of those blood rushes. Like if you lay down too long, you stand up and you get the dizzy feeling and stuff like that. I always felt like that when I walked in there. Now, it's surrounded by a big colonial stone wall. And it also, at one point, had wrought iron fences with those little points at the top of them because it was old. And they have since taken down that because too many people have been impaled by it trying to get the hell out of the cemetery. So what they have now is, when I went in there, I was taking the grave rubbings. I was looking at the Revolutionary War people and the War of 1812 soldiers and Cornelius Cornwall and all those guys. Well, when I got out, I still had that really weird feeling. We were parked right next to Louise's grave. So when we went out, my grandfather went out and then I went out after him. And when I got to the door of the car, everything turned black and it's like time stood still. So what I ended up doing was I looked back at the cemetery and it got like a calm before the storm. And I saw that mist, and it sure enough, it was a green mist that came out of the cemetery, out of the grave of Louise, and it manifested itself into a period woman, beautiful woman from late 1700s, and her feet were bare. She didn't have any shoes on, and she just kind of floated above the ground, and she looked down at her feet when she walked, and she walked around the cemetery stone, and then she saw me when she came around and was looking dead at us. And she looked up, she pointed at me, she walked to the wall of the cemetery. I stood there in shock. She just came up, she looked at the wall, realized she couldn't go anywhere, and then disappeared. Wow. And then it's like the light came back on, everything that we saw was just back to normal. And I'm like, wow, Grandpa, did you see that? He goes, I saw nothing. He goes, get in the car and we're going to go home. Now, I believe he saw something that day. But my grandfather would never admit to something like that. So I thought I was nuts. And sure enough, it took me till, that was 1986, 1985, something like that. I can't remember exactly when. But I found a write-up about this particular cemetery in 1996, in the summer of 96.
A coffee table book,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a coffee table book. It was about the famous Connecticut ghost. Sure enough, everything that I saw was documented in this book. Now, I didn't hear about any of this. This is way before, I mean, even in 96, the internet was there, but it wasn't as robust as it is today. So find out research on this stuff was almost impossible. And you had to physically go to the local libraries if you knew how to use that stuff. And I didn't. When I saw this, I felt completely happy that I finally had an answer. And more than 10 other people have documented the same thing I saw.
Jason, I got news for you.
What's that?
You're a tapophile.
I am a tapophile.
Well, and your adventures never stopped. We've heard you talk about the voodoo story where you were just running through a graveyard or walking through and ran into a site where someone had done some pretty nasty stuff. And then you told me today before we were talking, you have an update to that story.
I do. And this is really crazy because see, when I released that particular energy or curse or whatever you want to call it, I still think it was just summoning of a demon. That demon stayed with me and I thought I got rid of it, but I never did. And it was going to tell me it was going to hurt my wife and it was going to hurt Kim, who came with me that day. I said, look, I said, I'm the one that opened up this bottle. You can do whatever you want to me. You can embarrass me. You can destroy me. I don't care, but you will not hurt those two, period. And it did. It literally brought out my absolute worst secret that now everybody down here knows. But it blew up in their face because I realized it was going to do that. And I went ahead and jumped the gun so it couldn't win. And I beat the demon at its own game. I knew that it was going to do something to me. I just didn't know what, but I don't really have that much of a past to where I, you know, they'd say, oh my God, you know, this is horrible. You know, what happened? It was just something that I was born with. So I realized that's the secret it's going to tell. That's the secret I went out and told everybody. And sure enough, it was the exact opposite of what you'd expect when you tell somebody the secret that has been ailing my body my entire life. So come to find out, we are now down to, let's see here, I think it was at the end of August, and I was having a really bad psychic attack. And I got on the phone and said, look, to my friend, are you okay? Is your friend okay? She goes, yeah. I said, somebody's going to die. I said, I don't know who it is, but somebody's going to die. She goes, well, we're completely happy. I said, well, they're not happy. Then she goes, could it possibly be you? I said, nothing surprises me, but yeah, it could be me. And I was told by my grandmother, I know we talked about this on other stories, that I needed to get my energy 100% because I was going to face probably the worst challenge of my life. And if I did not have my energy to defeat this thing, I was gone. I was dead. So I'm like, okay, I just got my energy restored and I have been able to use it. And I've been able to completely freak people out with how strong it actually is. And so what I did was I went for a walk and I found coins in my sidewalk. The coins happened to be very specific dates, 78, 1988, 1990, 2014, and 2020. 2018 is when I got, 2018, 19 is when I experienced this demon. 1978 is when I was born. 1990 is when I first got MS. And 2014 is when I had my MS attack that almost killed me. I knew right then and there it was me. I was about ready to fight this thing. So I came home. I tried to relax, tried to prepare myself for it. Well, that night, I really did have probably one of the most incredible MS attacks I've ever had. And I actually met this demon. The demon was there with me. And I think the demon was actually trying to kill me while I was having this MS attack, because I already beat it in another way.
Mm-hmm.
As I was about ready to fight this thing, my wife grabbed my hand, which then sent me into what I believe, I'm pretty sure that I had a full-blown heart attack. Because I blacked out, I could not breathe, my whole body went dead, my heart stopped. She pounded me back to life. I woke up, and I was not right for a couple of days. And the next day, that was on a Thursday night, on Friday, I called called my friend Kim, because she's from Brooksville. And she goes, where are you? I said, I don't know. She goes, I said, I know I'm in Brooksville, but I do not know where. She goes, what do you mean you don't know where? I said, I am literally out here in the middle of this forest and I can't see where I am. She goes, well, I don't know how to help you. I said, okay, well, then I'll just go. So what I decided to do was I looked on my phone and I used the GPS. I just said, find a current location, and it showed me where I was. And I was about 600 to 700 yards away in this forest from the cemetery where I met the voodoo place on the same side.
You're kidding.
And when I woke up, because I don't even know how I got up there, but I somehow drove my own self up there, but I don't remember any of it. I was like a sleepwalk. When I got up there and I woke up in the middle of the forest, first of all, I looked around and said, oh, great. You know, this is great. But in my hand was the bottle, the jar with that voodoo doll again. Now, it's been 2 years since I've seen this thing. Wow. So how the hell did I find it in this particular cemetery? So I buried it in the middle there so it would never come back. And I mean, I buried it deep and I used my GPS to find that cemetery, which was the African American cemetery I just told you a few minutes ago. Went out there was my car, I went home and I felt completely better after that.
Wow. That is quite an update.
Yeah, it is. And I haven't had any problems with anything since then. It's been like my spirit is set free. Like if I could just fly around in the air and be happy and excited and see everything beautiful and everything like that, that's what happened. And it's changed my life.
Are you talking MS episodes or just general?
My MS episodes have diminished completely. I've had like one or two since then. And they haven't been bad, but I've been able to use my energy to reverse it. So I do have some bad ones. I mean, it can get bad, but I'm able to use my energy to defeat that. And the energy is what I was using to keep myself alive that night when I had that heart issue and the MS attack and everything else. It was too much stress on my body. So I'm here because of the energy that I'm able to manifest and use, which is some of the energy that I've used all these years to protect myself from other things. I just didn't have the full capacity of it.
That's an incredible story, Jason. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Are you going to share that one? Are you going to write that one up like you did your original book? Because I think it deserves it.
I'm thinking about it. And unfortunately, I'll have to tell my secret to everybody of what happened, because that was a vital key to this particular incident that has transpired over 3 years. So I know it's an important story to tell, because you got to really learn to love yourself. And it's a story of awakening. It's a story of breaking out of a jail. It's a story of being oppressed by a demon. I sat down to try to write it, but I'll tell you, it's one of the hardest things I've ever had to write. And I think I might need a ghostwriter for this because it's like writing a biography. And sometimes biographies, you know everything about yourself, but it's just hard to sometimes put it on paper. So that's exactly where I'm at right now, where I'm struggling to write it, but I do want to write it. And I think people need to hear the story because it's inspiring and it's also paranormal. So if you love the paranormal, it has two benefits to it.
It does. It's incredible. Do you feel like you've won the battle, that it's over, or is it still lingering back there that there may be more to do? How do you feel about that?
No, I believe that I beat this thing. I know I beat this thing. The one thing I do know is that what it exposed is still there, and that's going to continue to grow. I'm going to have to, again, try to be a little bit more comfortable with the situation that I'm facing, and that's fine. I got to learn to experience and grow with my own body, my own self, my own mind, and it's really done a lot of good as opposed to a lot of bad, despite what it was trying to do. So I do have these lingering type of situations that I'm going to have to tackle, and that's never going to go away. This is going to be my life now from here on in. So it did do irreputable damage, but it was actually irreputable goodness in the long run for me.
Well, Jason, I have got to say that is an incredible story. And your origin story it's chilling. It's absolutely chilling. I would say my assessment is correct. You are unique when it comes to graveyards.
Yes, I am.
Do you have anything final that you want to say about the graveyard and how you would like people to perceive them? Is there something you can wrap all of this up into a bow somehow?
Cemeteries are probably one of the most amazing places to go that are quiet. They're peaceful. There's generally not going to be anything there that's going to be harmful, unlike when I experienced, but that was actually outside of the cemetery by about 2 feet. So generally what you're going to find there is peace, love. You're going to feel emotions, and there's nothing to be afraid of. So don't ever worry about going to a graveyard, because it's the one place in this country, in this world, that you cannot get hurt in. Enjoy them. It's a garden. It's an art form. It's history, and it's families all together that have made up the generations to where we are today. So look at them for what they are, not what you perceive them to be as scary.
Well said. I guess because this is part two of talking about graveyards, I just want to reiterate that to me, graveyards represent history. They represent a place to, and I think you said it best earlier, a place to find out what your community is about. Like you mentioned, the founders of a town are predominantly displayed in a graveyard. You can go there and visit them. And something else you said blew me away is that you personally have seen graves from the 1600s. The oldest thing you can find out here in the Northwest are from the 1820s, 1830s. And for you to say, yeah, I've seen graves from the 1600s, that blows my mind.
Yes. And they're gorgeous, and they're so well kept regardless. And it's something you got to see. And if you go to New England, you go to the Middle Atlantic states, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, it's very easy to see that, because they were where some of the early settlers came in with the pilgrims. Remember, the pilgrims are here in 1620.
Yeah.
So these places are still there. And if you go to Salem, you're going to see all the graves from the people that were killed, that were accused of being witches. Mm-hmm. Those are 1600s too. So it's very common to see, and it's a really impressive thing to see. So if you really want to see some history, go check that out.
I guess I have one more question, and I don't know if you can answer this, but why are all the gravestones in Florida flat and not raised? Is there a reason for that you know of?
I have looked for a reason, and most of the people that I find out, because they're countersunk into the ground, is because the grass here is really thick. It's not like New England. It's not like the Midwest or anything like that. It's really thick. And it hurts your feet if you walk on it.
Really?
So I think what they do is they just countersink them into the ground. I mean, there are some above raised you know, headstones. There still are some, but they're very far and few in between. If anything, you see like a mausoleum or like a private crypt. I think it's that way they can mow over them pretty easily. And they can just do long strips because of the fact that it's convenient, it's hot. So a lot of this stuff is done during the day. So it makes it easier for them to landscape and everything else.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for being so candid with us and telling us your stories. They are truly amazing. I am referring to Ron's amazing stories. do you have any last thoughts? Anything else you want to tell us about what's going on with you or how we can find out about you or anything like that?
Well, I will do this. I got two websites. You can see my art. You can go to Imagination Art Studios, Imagination Art Studios with an S.com. And if you want to check out my goodies for your dogs or cats, it's GladysGoodies.com, GladysGoodies, goodies.com. And you can just see what I got going on up there. If I have any specials, it's always there. And if you want to reach out to me and talk about ghosts or anything like that, those are the places to do it.
Awesome. The last thing I'm going to ask you is, how are things at the radio station? How are we doing at the radio station?
It happens to still be one of the most popular shows we have. People love your stories. People love to hear the stories of other people. And, you know, of course, those old time radio things, that's really fun. And it's nostalgic and it's great acting. So it has always been a very popular show on our station. And you can hear you Thursday night and you can hear you also every Sunday night, too. So we kick off the week with you and we try to almost end the week with you as well. So it gives something for somebody to look forward to all week.
And that noise in the background is Jason's phone, I'm guessing.
No, that's actually my clock, so I'm going to go to the other room here. I forgot that thing's there.
Well, Jason, I want to thank you for being with us today and taking the time and talking to us. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I can't wait until the next time we get together and talk with The Paranormal with Jason. The Paranormal with Jason was brought to you by Gladys Goodies, great treats for your pets to eat. If you need treats or swag for your little friends, head to GladysGoodies.com and indulge your pets. Don't forget to use your very own promo code, RONS, that's RONS, and you will receive a 20% discount on all of your purchases. That website again is GladysGoodies.com. Until next time, watch out for the paranormal.
Don't be scared. I'm the super sweet monster with the super sweet new cereal, Count Chocula.
Biffle, here's the super sweet new cereal, Frankenberry.
But I've got chocolate sweeties for monstrous chocolate flavor.
Well, I've got berry-flavored sweeties for monstrous strawberry flavor.
Count Chocula.
Frankenberry.
Hi.
Frankenberry.
Count Chocula.
That was episode number 456, and these are the people in the neighborhood. Chris Bennett, Jerome Masters, and our very own Jason Dowd. Thank you, guys. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you will find any of the links I mentioned and how to contact us. Do you want to help the show? The best thing you can do is to tell your friends all about it, and please leave reviews or feedback wherever you listen. Clicking that follow or like button makes us grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.